never use material gain to cultivate. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Purport. We've already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. But there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. The general tendency of an ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or any other occupational service. Even in the Vedic scripture literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered, and most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. Why are so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfy sense gratification. This cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity, followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of fully occupied men. But in the statement of Sutta Goswami, as per the verdict of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present shloka. One should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only, nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows. So now Srila Sutta Goswami is describing the activities of the actual well-situated personality. That many people, many are not religious at all. They don't perform religious duties. They're not interested in performing religious duties. So, but here, those who are interested in religious duties then are described. Now, in performing these religious duties, then he's pointing out that they should be performed for the ultimate goal. Right? It's already been mentioned before that the ultimate goal of all duties is to go back to Godhead. That's what we should be doing our activities for, nothing else. So now, for someone who has that understanding, they should not perform their duties because it will give material result. Right? This is a very common principle, so we figure we do an activity, it should get a result. That's standard. But now here it's pointing out that that result that one is looking for should not be gain, material gain, artha. It shouldn't be that, because otherwise, then, from gain, why do you want gain? Prabhupada asked that question. Why would someone want gain? Gain is there for sense gratification. So that's where the devotee, that's not the interest. Now, of course, someone would say, but hey, we got to live, we got to have money, we got to do these things. But that doesn't actually support the statement. Because one is doing the duty, the activity itself will always give result. It's not that it's an illusion to think because I want result, then result is coming. That we are in any way in control of that result or any way the cause of the result. Krishna makes that point clear in the Gita. Is that only foolish persons think that the result that is they've gained from their activity is due to themselves. And that that result from that activity then is used for themselves. However they want for sense gratification. So this is not a well-educated position because the modes of nature create our ability to do an activity. They create our success or failure in the activity and therefore they create the result. So now that result then should be used to our advantage to go back to Godhead. So result will come anyway. This is the thing, is thought. If I think I do the activity and I want the result, I'll get it. But if I don't, I won't. Right? If we think about it, you know, it sounds very natural. Yes, because Buddhism or voidism is very natural for the materialistic living entity. Right? If no one is in the forest, when a tree falls, will it make any sound? That's Buddhism. That's what they spend their time doing, figuring out they do that, right? Christians figure out how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, and Buddhists try to figure out what's the sound of one hand clapping. You know, such things like that. So this is Buddhism. If I don't think about the result, if I'm not focused on it, then I'm not going to get it. No, you have to have a goal to your activity. But the result that will come from any activity, that's not up to us, that's up to the modes. Therefore, we're focused on performing our duty to please the Lord. That you can do. Anything else you can't guarantee. You cannot guarantee a result. No one can say. Means one will try one's best. We see people will come up to Arjuna. I mean, great personalities will come up to him. Like the example of Agnidev. He comes to Krishna and Arjuna and says, I have something I want from you. Can you give it to me? He doesn't say, what is it, and then I'll decide. He just says, whatever I can do to my best ability, I will do to get you what you want. He never says, yes, yes, I can give you that, no problem. No, I will try my best, and then the result naturally is up to the Lord. Right? So this is the position. So Arjuna, you know, he is very well, he has a very, nicely developed and mature, you know, Kshatriya, or, you know, male ego. But he never still says, yes, I'll get, you know. He will say, yes, we will make that endeavor, and we will do our best. What comes? That's another thing. We don't know. We can't say. So that's the position. So then in performing the occupational duty, then it has to be to please the Supreme Lord, because that's the only thing that we can really, have some control over, is our desire. So our desire is not for material gain, but our desire is to please the Lord. Then the activity is done. The activity is done by the modes, you know, and the result is given by the modes. So like that, then we will get the result. Otherwise, one can't guarantee that part of it. That part of the equation, one cannot guarantee. But our consciousness, that we have some control over, because that is us. Right? Our consciousness is us. But what the modes will do and what results they'll give, that's not us, it's the modes. Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of, oh, it's nice philosophy, but let's get down to the real world. No, that's the point. The real world's not us. Right? The real world has nothing to do with the soul. So that means the real world does its real world things despite us, whatever consciousness we're in, right? Right? The bridge collapses, it doesn't matter what consciousness we're in, it's still going to fall apart. Right? So it's nothing to do with us. There's going to be an earthquake, there's going to be a cyclone, there's going to be a crash in the stock market, nothing to do with us. Right? It has nothing to do with us. So the only thing that we can actually control, we want to be the controllers, then is your consciousness. That's it. That's as far as you can go. The modes of nature will provide various opportunities. Then we can choose to take part in them or not. And in taking part, then we make that determination to apply yourself to the working of those modes in that area. And still, our only control is then the consciousness. So this is the opportunity. So here it's pointing out in a very simple way, is that they're meant for ultimate liberation. All occupations, doesn't matter what it is. Any of the varnas, any of the ashrams, they're all only meant to please the Supreme Lord. That's all. They're only meant for going back to Godhead. There's no other purpose. So then, if those are followed to please the Lord, then one develops nicely. Causeless knowledge and detachment automatically come. Like that. Performance of the duties, if they're done in the proper consciousness, automatically knowledge comes, automatically detachment. You don't have to separately endeavor. There's no need. But what we have to endeavor is to keep the consciousness focused on the Supreme Lord. That's the actual point. Then, the next part of it is, okay, now activity's done, activity always gets result. So the result that comes from that activity that the modes perform, then we shouldn't now claim that and use it for our sense gratification. Because we perform the activity for the Lord, and then what comes should be used in the Lord's service. So that means what comes gets again reinvested into occupational duties. Right? And in the performance of those duties, the senses are automatically taken care of. Right? Does that make sense? They're already included. It's not a separate endeavor. Modernists make this a separate endeavor because it's so hard to get sense gratification. You know, all the time. There's this idea that all the time you can have sense gratification, right? No austerity, nothing. Well, it is a little austere to stand out half-dressed. But other than that, then there's no austerity. You just enjoy, right? So then that's not possible because austerity creates enjoyment, right? So without austerity, there is no enjoyment. So it's an illusory thing. So then one has to separately focus on it, conscious on it like this. But the point is you perform your duty, it's automatically included. The mother performs her duty. Then automatically we see the members of the household are fed and taken care of. Right? The senses are taken care of. It's not a separate endeavor. Right? The mother doesn't separately try to please the senses of the child. She simply tries to perform her duties as a mother. That happens automatically. Right? Because the duties of a mother include that. So any of the duties, they already include that. Right? We have to take one of the services is honoring Prashad. So automatically the senses are taken care of. Right? Therefore, se anamrita pao, honor. Right? Honor this Prashadam. Worship this Prashadam. You do that, and the worship method of worship is through eating in good consciousness. Then automatically the senses are taken care of. It happens automatically. So in every sphere of sense gratification, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, there's duties. You perform those duties, the sense gratification of those automatically comes. It's not separately endeavored for. Therefore, it says you don't have to do it. The results you get, you engage it in your occupational duties to perform more duties. That was Yudhishthira's lamentation of being in the forest. Not that he had no money and now he's a vagrant out in the forest. His lamentation is now we don't have money to perform sacrifices that we can engage Brahmins and therefore we can give charity to them. Right? That was what was lamentable. Because now we cannot do our duties of pleasing the Brahmins. Right? So many Brahmins are there, but I have no money in which to engage them and feed them and give charity to them. And that's it. So he wanted to be able to do his duties. So that's the only reason money is there for. And in doing that, then one is satisfied. So it's actually faith. So that's the point. The person who is engaged in the ultimate liberation, that means they have faith. So those persons that have the faith that results going to come anyway and sense gratification is going to come anyway. So all we have to do is focus on our duties and do them properly to please Krishna. Then everything else will come automatically. We don't have to separately endeavor. Any questions on this? Yes.
Comment on the word apavarga.
Apavarga. Apavarga.
There in Akshara Tantra, there's a scripture dealing with the letters, the meaning of the letters.
Uh-huh.
It says that there are four varnas, then five vargas. The first four, kacha, ta, and ta, we are the kshatriya, brahmana kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, and the pa, those ones who are not those. Apavarga. So, also we say that those four, even the Shudras, they go in for liberation. They try to get out of the material world. So they perform their duties according to scripture. But the Pavarga, they are not. So the Pavarga has a special characteristic. Pa means polishing of hard work. Pa means pena, means form coming due to hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Then it says bhakti, that means working for no use, extra work for no proper reason.
Mm-hmm.
Bhaya is fearing from they losing something,
mm-hmm.
but the divine and the ma is the last mrityu, that they have to die very cruelly. So then those who are going for apavarga, those four, they avoid, they're not going to get this. But those who are they not trying for liberation, then they have to face all these nice variations.
Interesting also has here apavarga and Vaikuntha, is that when you don't have to separately describe transcendence. You know, it says material has to be described because it doesn't make any sense to living entity. Right? Pain, this, that doesn't make any sense. So it has to be defined. You know? Happiness you don't have to define. People don't say, why am I happy? You know, why am I so happy? No, but it's why am I suffering? Why is this happening to me? You know? So then the definition is given to the material, and then what is the opposite of that, which doesn't have these qualities, that's spiritual. Because that's just normal. Like that. So that's very, very interesting. Something, anything else? Yes? Vargas means in the Sanskrit alphabet, you have there's five groups of the letters. You know, kavarga, you know, the ka ka ga ga na, then tavarga, ta ta da da na, then tavarga, ta ta da na na, and chavarga, cha cha ja ja na. So it's just how it goes. So the thing is because the language is coming from Krishna, therefore, it also carries all the philosophy and everything. It means any one subject that is there in the Vedic literatures, each one of them can fully describe the personality of Godhead, the transcendental relationship between the Lord and the devotees, the material world, everything. It's just a matter of the tattva and rasa of the Lord coming in the form of letters, or those letters combined into words, and then those words then combining together into phrases. Then each of those can describe the Lord. So depending how much you know, either by syllable you can describe, or by words, or by group of words. So it's very, very nice like that. So then here it's just the Jiva Goswami opens his grammar with Narayanad Udbhuto Yam Varnakramaha, that all the letters have come from the Supreme Lord.
They're seeds,
and from that you can explain everything. So that's one thing. So you take this. So this is one of the topics. So it's generally used a lot in the scriptures because you're dealing through the element of literature. So therefore they'll use grammar to explain things also, and that's accepted by others because Sanskrit grammar is logical. It does connect to all the other scriptures. It does connect to transcendence. So if you give a grammatical explanation of a word or a group of words, it will be accepted as evidence. It's not speculation, because Sanskrit itself is not speculation. It's actual science. It's transcendental science. So it can be, so the grammarians or the logicians and the nyayas, the various spiritual commentators and that, when they discuss these things, then grammar will be used. It's always used because it's logical. So grammar is used to support logic. Logic is used to support grammar. They're basically interchangeable like that. So then here, then Vaikuntha, not anxiety. The material world is always anxiety because of birth, death, old age, disease. But Vaikuntha, you don't have those. There is no anxiety. Because anxiety only comes to the living entity because of these temporary situations. Like you see, birth, death, old age, disease are all situations. So they're connected with sat. So they're the opposite of sat. Right? They're temporary. So that is where a relationship is established, is on the principle of eternality. That's where you establish anything. like that. It has to sit on that quality. Then it has a definable nature. Then it can have a goal and an interaction. Does that make sense? So therefore the sambandha is based on this sat principle. So then if that principle is temporary, then people become fearful. And because they become fearful, then they begin an anxiety. And anxiety, you'll lose something, or you won't gain something. It means you don't have it anyway, and you're trying to get it, or you have it and you'll lose it. So therefore there's anxiety. So Vaikuntha, then there's no anxiety, because you're working on eternality. So your relationship, your identity is always established. There's nothing to gain, nothing to lose. It's always there. So you're always enjoying that position. So it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here, just by using the grammar, Vaikuntha means no anxiety, then it already describes the spiritual world, already describes the material world. So that's the nice thing about it, is the Sanskrit language, the actual words and the syllables actually have meaning. And it doesn't change. It's inherent meaning. So therefore it's religion. So grammar is actually the religion of what are the words and letters. It's understanding what is the religion of a particular word. Like you have the letter ka. So that's Brahma. So that'll be connected with creation and activities and that. So therefore, then in the grammar, you're going to get all of your elements within the grammar that actually make the grammar work. That make it work as a, how do you say it, make it work, but actually express activity. Right? Your karaka means your situations in which the activities are done or who's doing it, all the relationships. The kriya, which means the active verb, or the English would be the transitive verb, right? Because you have verbs that are not transitive, they just show existence. But the transitive are kriya. And then when you create a word from all the affixes, then that's called kridanta. Krit means that it performs an activity, anta means ending. So when you create a word, you know, by adding those endings. So it moves words from one category to another. And it shows movement. So you turn verbs into nouns by this, or nouns into verbs. So anything that's dynamic comes out of ka. You know, and Brahma, he's the creator. Like that. So if you say ka, you know, yeah. And so all the demigods in ka were there. That ka means Brahma. Like that. So that's the thing's inherent, and it functions in anything. So when you see that ka, then you know that that's the root of it. You know that that's how it will function. So you don't have to, there's no speculation on the word. Like that. But, you know, try to figure out what table means. You know. Yes.
Karma.
Yeah, karma. Yeah, anything like that. You see it's all coming out of that root word. Like that. I think the root is what? To do?
Kri.
Which means?
To do.
Kri means to do. That's the root. And then from that, you add all these affixes and prefixes and all, and then you create words from that that all are connected with doing something. Like that. So that's the beauty of the language. So then, that's why you'll see many times Prabhupada will point out, this word is significant. It's not just that what it means. It means he'll bring out for us just the final, you know, translation of the word. But you'll find in the commentaries of the Acharyas, they've commented on that word. That's why Prabhupada will say, this word is significant. But in their commentary, they'll break it down into its syllables and break it apart and prove the philosophy based on the grammar of that word. So that's you know, one of the advantages of the language. That's why we're going through the language and seeing how Prabhupada uses the language. And he uses it in quite a unique way. So generally devotees will take, well, it's because he doesn't know English is a second language. And, you know, he uses it simply. But actually, if you look at it grammatically, the words are simple, but the grammar is highly complex. Because it's more similar in use to Sanskrit. He doesn't use English as an English person uses, because an English person is basically uneducated in what real grammar is. He uses it as someone who knows Sanskrit uses language. So therefore, he speaks so simply, but it's so clear, because he knows how to get the point across. Well, you read others, and they say so many things in that. Right? It means any sentence you can take, and it means something. But you take even the greatest literatures, and they're known for a phrase or a paragraph. They're not known for the whole thing. You take out something here and that doesn't really mean anything. You know, they had this ending or the opening was special or a particular thing in a whole work like that. But Prabhupada, you could quote anything from anywhere and it means something. So that's because he knows language. The others know, you know, expression. But they don't actually know language. Does that make sense? So that's the specialness of that. Anything else? Yes. The
misuse of grammar becomes grammar.
Grammar becomes grammar.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Misuse of grammar becomes grammar.
Yes,
that's fine.
So much writing that is no use.
Yeah, that's interesting. Oh, yeah. Yes, what is it?
You're saying that the only thing we can be in control of is our consciousness, and I'm just wondering that, but our consciousness is also controlled by the modes. So how do we actually step aside from the modes to be able to see what they're trying to do to our consciousness and our behaviour so that we can choose whether we, you know, act in them or not?
Main thing is if you want to work outside the modes are only influencing because we allow it to. Right? That's all. We allow it, then it happens. We don't allow it, it doesn't happen. So when there are situations that we're all, it means technically we're always in control of the situation. Means at every moment we can be in control of our consciousness and use it, the situation to advance our consciousness. So it doesn't matter if what's happening is good or bad. Someone who knows the field will get benefit from either. Right? That will always function. So someone who can't get, only if it's ideal they get benefit, and when it's not ideal they don't get benefit, means someone who doesn't really know the field. So then they say it's circumstances beyond my control. Right? But the point is you may be, but we have to understand is it's always beyond their control. The modes are doing it anyway. Why are this situation nice, right? You go out one day, everybody's nice. You go out one day, everybody's not nice. So we're not in control anyway. You know, we go out, everybody's nice, but we're not nice. You know, or we go out, everybody's not nice, we're nice. So we're not in control. So the point is whatever the modes throw before us, if we're in the proper consciousness, right, then it will always go to advantage. Right? Even if it's been a bad day, but then in a bad day means, and it becomes very obvious that things in the material world aren't great. Because what is bad? You look at it, it means bad day meant our endeavor to further our attainment or maintenance or enjoyment of the six opulences has been thwarted in some way or another. That's the definition of a bad day. Right? You know? So we distract it onto others. We'll distract it to other people. You know, because their activity made mine not be successful. Or my already successful activity has been reduced in its success. But it's actually, just as we're not doing, they're not doing either. It's just the modes doing, and whoever is willing, whoever has the consciousness, then gets sucked in and gets put into the machine. You know, like the manager's doing something, and they look around the room, and whoever has the right look on their face, then they pull them in, and okay, you do this, you do that. You know? So then, that's what's going on. So then if we decide we don't want to take part, then gradually that will happen. It means we say, yes, I'm determined, but it still happened. It means our determination was not enough. You know, it starts off one way and gradually then develops. Does that make sense? So if there's something we don't want to be involved in, then we can be not involved in it. And even if it's by the modes, the activity we're involved in, we don't have to have our consciousness be affected by it. You know? So that's the point, is you can be in control of your consciousness. Activity, it may or may not appear that way. You know? It may go the way we want, it may not go the way we want. That's karma. And that karma is based on your previous consciousness. Right? And what you do today, that's your free will. That's your consciousness today. Does that make sense? Both are consciousness. But the result of your previous consciousness comes to you now. That's called karma, or predestined. Right? But what you do with it now in your consciousness, that's your free will. And that creates your further karma. Does that make sense? So now you do Krishna karma, you get out of the material world. It dissolves material entanglement. And if you don't, then it entangles you. Does that make sense?
Just
thinking of it, like, sometimes planetary
period affects, like, what can manage and consciousness, like, for years and stuff. And I'm just thinking
of it also, like, our consciousness, how we react to things and our thoughts and feelings can be so automatic. And, like, that's because we allow them to be. Like, almost,
does it make it more conscious?
Makes you conscious. It's not going to change the planet. See, the thing is what you have to get down to. The bottom line comes is, how do you consider success in spiritual life? Is that everything goes materially perfect for you? You change the result of the planet, or you change your consciousness? Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Is this planet is giving me bad results, so I'll change that and I'll get a good result. Then we'll consider that good religion. But the point is whether it's bad or good, it's what is our consciousness? Right? Let's say you go into the kitchen and you have rice and potatoes. Okay, what will you do with it? Right? What if you go in and you have rice and milk? Right? So, is this anything wrong with either of those? No, that's the point. So an expert cook goes in, and someone who's not an expert cook, what am I going to do? There's only rice and potatoes, there's only rice and milk. I can't make anything. Because they already have a plan. I'm going to cook this. They walk into the kitchen, none of it's there. And then that's it, no cooking. No, expert cook walks in. Okay, they don't say, I'm going to cook this. I have an idea to cook this, but let's go see the reality, what's in the kitchen. Right? Then they walk into the kitchen, look around, what pots, what things, this, that. Then they say, okay, with this situation and these facilities, you know, these ingredients, I can cook this. And everybody will say it's nice. Like that. So that's the situation. That's actually what you have. You're not going to change the planets, because the planets are how the three modes just perform their duties. Right? Maya, she doesn't sit there personally and do it. She gets the planets to do it. Right? So the planets, they do all her work. So it's not that you need to change what they're doing. You need to change your consciousness. Right? That's the whole point. So each planet, because all those qualities are coming from the Lord, right? It means the modes are coming from the Lord. So the planets are coming and are based on that. They execute those modes in various combinations. Right? So then that is then how you, if you, they therefore coming from the Lord, they have all good qualities. But if they're used not properly, they have bad qualities. Does that make sense? Right? So because we want to hang on to everything, therefore we consider Saturn bad, because he takes things away. Right? But Saturn's a devotee. What's he taking away? Has there ever been an astrologer that mentions that Saturn will take away your spiritual development? Never. They say it'll take away your material facilities, your position, your fame, your, that he'll do. So now, is that good or bad? So that depends upon you. You can decide this is bad, or you can go, okay, then we'll use it to become humble, because devotees are humble. Saturn's a devotee. Right? Out of the nine planets, he's the only one known as a devotee. Others are devotees, but they're not known as devotees. He's known as a devotee. Right? So Shani is... Does that make some sense? So that's the point, is you have control over what you do with the situation that the planets create. You don't have control over the planets. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, because you don't try to control the planets. You try to control your consciousness, so whatever happens, then it goes nice. That's right. Yes?
Sometimes, or at one point, some living entities, they're so deeply in ignorance that they appear to have no choice. I mean, in the mode of passion, at least, you doubt, am I doing the right thing? But if you're deeply in the mode of tamas, you don't have any choice. You have to act.
Yeah.
So at what point does that... It's like you give your power of attorney away.
Means it's always there. Means in ignorance, then it's... But you've made that conscious choice to choose that path of ignorance. So then the result is then one becomes more and more ignorant and more unaware. But as you become more ignorant, then the results and dealings with you become more severe. The more you are in goodness, then it only takes a very slight thing. Just like if you have a group of persons who are work together and are well trained, simply a glance gets the work done. Right? But people who are untrained and are unwilling, then you may have to raise your voice, you may have to, you know, so many different things that would be considered more harsh. You know, or you get down, you know, you're like the bull, it moves through the field and plows the field. It's not by sweet words. You know? Like that. They have methods that if the bull is, you know, willing, then you know, a few noises and all that. But when they're unwilling, then they have to be a little bit, you have to make it obvious. Like that. So that's the point. If someone in the mode of ignorance, it has to be made really obvious that this is not right. So that's why we see in the Vedic literature, then for things that are done wrong, then the results then are quite strong. So those situated in ignorance, it will be stronger than those in goodness.
The three kleshas will become stronger.
Yeah, the three kleshas. They'll become stronger.
The three what?
The three, Adi Bhautik, Adi Atmik. They'll just become stronger because you don't respond. You know, it's just like someone was telling me the Maasai in Africa, because their whole lifestyle is based on the cows. 6 weeks before a cow will manifest a disease, they can already tell the symptoms that they're going to get this disease after 6 weeks. So already 6 weeks before, they're taking care and, you know, whatever it needs to be, that they never even get sick. So they never treat the cow after it's sick. They always treat it so it never gets sick. So that's subtle. So you can tell the symptoms of, oh, this is going to result in that later. So then your difficulties are less. You know, or even if there are difficulties, they don't bother you because you're not dealing with so much ego and desire, you know, and frustration and all that. So it's whatever happens. It's not a problem. Like Yudhishthira personally has no problem being in the forest. But he has a problem because his dependents are in anxiety. Therefore, he would like something to, you know, make that situation better. You know, because Bhima and Draupadi especially are not overly pleased with the arrangements. Like that. And besides that, because they are Kshatriyas, then, you know, they should be able to perform their duties of protecting the people. In the forest, you can do it. You can protect the sages, but, you know, that are out there. But that's it. You know, his abilities are more, so he should be fully engaged. But since he can do that, then he sits all day with the Brahmins and just hears philosophy and discussions, and they perform their sadhana and, you know, do what they can to worship and serve the Brahmins. So they use it to advantage. You know, like that. Does that make some sense? Yes?
Narad, on this point about controlling the planets, sometimes an astrologer may give you a particular gemstone to somehow dissipate the influence of the planet. I mean, how does that practically work?
Basically, what's happening is by that gemstone you become more conscious, and if you become more conscious, then you are less affected by the effect. That would be the ultimate, you know, what's going on. Because technically, it's very hard to, the result that's coming to you is your karma. So basically, what you can change is what you do with it. That's what you can deal with. So even if you're dealing with a change there, you're dealing with a change that, okay, you've previously done an activity that gets you a result. That planet, now whichever planet's in charge of that result, is going to give that to you. Now, because you had a particular consciousness in performing that activity to get that result, there's going to be a natural continuance of that consciousness in how you're going to deal with the result that you've now attained. So by that gemstone, you could possibly change that. That you're not going to react to it in the way you normally would, as just, you know, as the modes of nature would have it. So it can affect that. You know? But the point is that it's trying, the scriptures, as Prabhupada's pointing out in the purport, is trying to get you to follow the scriptures. You know, you mentioned that you have the five Vargas, so four are those who are trying to follow the scriptures, and one is those who aren't. So the scriptures are always trying to get you to follow by one method or another, either by bhakti, by liberation, by future enjoyment, or by today's enjoyment. Like that. So it's some method is there to get you inspired, so that you will consider the planets, know that the planets are there, know that the planets are actually, you know, the Lord's instruments for carrying out your, you know, your karma, your desires, that they have particular natures that has to be respected. So therefore you have these stones, you have these different things. Then it works. You know what I'm saying? It brings you to a higher level of consciousness, makes you more conscious, makes you more understand you're not the controller, you're just part of the whole scene. Then it does something. But it just depends upon what level you want to deal at it with. What is your purpose? So that's the thing, is you could be wearing that gemstone for basically four different reasons. Because you want to remove the obstacle for performing your devotion. Or you want to remove your obstacle for liberation, or for getting the heavenly planets, or for enjoying. Right? So that's what you have to deal with. So if it is connected, that's the point. If any occupation done to please the Lord, then it's considered useful. Any occupation done not to please the Lord, even though it's perfectly right according to the scriptures themselves say is useless. Because the scriptures are only there to take you back to Godhead. They're not there for any other purpose. So if you go back to Godhead, then the scriptures consider their duties as perfect. You have to remember, they're all people. In Brahma's court, Srimad Bhagavatam personified sits there. So does the Gita, so do the Vedanta Sutras, so the Upanishads, the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, all everything. They're all there in personified form, and they discuss the philosophy. Because they take a particular angle. So they discuss, that's what they do all day, is just discuss amongst each other. You know? And then after everybody said whatever they say, then Srimad Bhagavatam gives a conclusion. Like that. So this is what's going on. So So they'll consider your following of the scriptures as useful if you went back to Godhead. If you don't, they don't consider it. So it's not just our, okay, we like to look at it and maybe it works this way, maybe not. No, it works in a particular way. It doesn't work in another way. Like that. It's due to ignorance that we think that there is an option other than the scriptures. It's just ignorance. Right? It's just the Pavargites. Right? That they think there is an option other than the scriptures for getting anything done. So then, that's the difficulty. So they work hard, they observe the material energy, those with brains. They see patterns, and then they make theories based on those patterns, and they try to apply those theories into their daily life. And many times they work, because they've observed people's day-to-day life, but many times they don't, because you're dealing with the bigger realm of karma, three modes. So one person, he was in this situation, did this activity, he got a good result, because his karma was such. Another person, the same activity, didn't. Doesn't have good karma, he doesn't get the result. Therefore, then someone else comes up with a new theory, how to apply it, by their observation, because he didn't take into consideration these three situations. And adding that, then we see we get more. But then it may work there, but it still doesn't work in another area. So this way they go on and on speculating eternally. You know, and then by that time they die. And then, you know, just a little bit, if they publish, then it goes on. They didn't, it disappears, or it merges into someone else's theory. And like this, and it just goes around and around and around and around. Like that. Just like that. It's going. Does that make sense? So the whole point is to follow that. So then you can take that level as if the jewel works like there. Some will then take it to another, they'll use covetous. And then some will just go, just depend on the Lord. So like that, you choose what is, you know, best for your situation. But know that it's not because you went down to the shop and you ordered the ring and now you're in control of the planet. That's not exactly doesn't quite work like that. Like that, yes.
I just add that mantra is the most powerful because it involves our active engagement of consciousness.
Mm.
And the physical, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You catch that? He's saying mantra is more powerful because it actually engages us. The jewel doesn't do any. We don't do anything other than we went out and bought it or we wear it. But otherwise, it's forgotten. But mantra then is more powerful because then we're actually engaged. So then it focuses the consciousness.
Yeah, I've heard that mantra, jewels, and herbs are the three most powerful things in the universe. But mantra is the topmost.
Yeah. Mantra. Herbs and jewels, yeah, because they're all coming from the Lord.
Also, what the Garuda Purana says, also Markandeya Purana, that someone wants the benefit from a plant and needs the tree, mantra, the stone, because the stone is not as material. Mm-hmm. It's bringing the rays that are subtle and affects the consciousness that is in the chakras.
Mm-hmm.
And then charity.
Mm-hmm. Charity.
To be very charitable, because mainly it's for grihastas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brahmachari, sannyasi, they don't need them.
Yeah.
The grihastas, they need to be very charitable, so the planet affects. Maybe it's pleased by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But mantra is in a different category.
Yeah. Yeah, it's said that one who chants mantra means then they know the whole scripture, they know everything. That's the best. So if one's ultimate goal is this, then one has to decide. You know, because he's saying, as if they're bringing out another technical point, is that the rays that are brought by that stone, depending on the quality of the stone, and therefore, then it will affect the chakras. So if the chakras are more purified than that, then it makes it easier for the consciousness. At the same time, it's just by chanting, you can do the same thing, because it's more powerful. Like that. You know, we see that Prabhupada, there's an example in Vrindavan, the very last days, the last month, then the devotee is mentioned about that if he wore a blue sapphire, that would be good for his health. So he said, probably said, yeah, you can try. Because he wore it. Because it only has effect on his body. It makes the chakra spin a little better or something. Great. But you know, as far as consciousness, it doesn't have any importance there. Especially because the astrologers that they confirmed which gem he should wear already said, according to this person's chart, he's already, you know, would have died years ago. So he's only alive on his own mystic potency. You know, so it's like try it. You know, we don't know. You know, everything is this person's in another category. So, you know, yes. Is the Bhagavatam personified Krishna? Then I know there are different personalities. There are individuals who get that opportunity. Just like we see the personified Vedas, then they take birth in Krishna Lila as gopis. Because from being the Vedas and knowing all these things, then they understood service to Krishna is the topmost, and in that then service to Krishna in the conjugal rasa was the topmost, and of that then those who were like this. So then they figured out, hey. So then they took birth as gopis in Krishna Lila. So it appears that they're individual jivas who get that opportunity to deal in that realm of one of Krishna's manifestations of potencies. You know, just like the four Kumaras are considered incarnations of Krishna, but they're individual jivas. So they become empowered like that. So then that personality would be empowered with the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. But the potency itself is Krishna. You know, that's why, you know, it's just like you have the sun god. He's empowered with the potency of Krishna. So you have the sun god, but then you have Surya Narayan, or Krishna in that form, in which he is manifesting that particular potency. Like that. So he's actually the sun god. But there is a jiva that gets to sit in the post of the sun god and take care of the offices of the sun god. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes you get these two aspects of the worship. You know, you have worship of Vibhisvan or Varuna. Generally, they most seem to stick to those two. Right? But it's also, I think, Yama, Kugara, they're all sun gods. There's 11. No, 12. There's 12 Adityas. So they all do that, dude. I couldn't hear.
At the time of initiation, sometimes it's said that the spiritual master gets the karma, but is it also just the consciousness which changes, or is it really the karma which is...
It's the whole package. Yeah, so don't... In other words, don't... try to lighten what's going on. That's only getting the consciousness. You know, in my conscience, you're not so bad. You know, it's pretty good. So it's a good deal. You know, initiating me, you're getting a good deal. You know, so it's the whole thing goes. Though much of the time it goes in the form of bad dreams and stuff like that, but it can affect the health and so many other things. That's the point. So the spiritual master has to be careful also who he takes on and how many. Because then it may affect the consciousness. Yes? No. Yes.
A student colleague of mine is rejecting the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna encouraged Arjuna to fight.
Who is rejecting?
A school colleague of mine.
A school colleague. Oh, okay.
What would be the best answer?
Well, just ask, do the greenies go out and fight? The greenies?
The green part.
Yeah, the green part, they're going out for saving the earth and all this and that. And they fight also. Everybody fights. You know, I mean, you have to get across the street at rush hour. It's a fight. You know, I mean, you're going to say that he's not doing anything in his life. It's a fight. So tell him like this. So then, okay, let us say he's sitting in his living room there with his, you know, family and his wife and his mother and other family members, and suddenly some undesirable social elements break into their house and start beating all his family members and, you know, these kind of things, then he'll stand by and, no, please, it's not a nice thing, you shouldn't beat them, no, they're nice people, you should change it. Is that what he's going to do? Just ask him then. So that's my point. If that's what he would do, then okay, then he can get upset. But he won't do. So that's the point, is violence has its place if there's a wrongdoing. So to establish the protection of the citizens, sometimes those in the political field have to fight so that the citizens can actually be protected. He has to make a distinction between those who are doing it for their own purposes and those who are doing it for the protection of the people. Of the?
It's an ethical dilemma.
It's an ethical dilemma.
Yeah, right.
It's a spiritual dilemma.
Yeah.
The ethics are already kicked out in the first chapter. Yeah, that's why Gita means your Bible is trying to establish ethics in unethical people. The Gita is trying to take ethical people to transcendence. So it's a different thing. That's why he says he's a fool. You're quoting ethics, but only for your own self-centered purposes. You're not quoting ethics for spiritual upliftment. In fact, you know, you don't even seem to know what spirit is. You know? So that's the whole thing. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, without this fight, he will not be even be here.
Yeah, that's true. Can you imagine you had all those demons still around? He's saying if there wasn't that fight, then we wouldn't even be here. You know, all those. Yeah. Last question, yes.
Regarding whatever reactions we are getting in this life now, is it all from the previous life activities, or because we have something called instant karma also?
Like instant karma, yes. You just add water and mix. Yeah, instant. Some call it reconstituted karma, yes. Okay. We can get, I think, the third shot from the game. It simply is a reaction for, means whatever your activity, then whatever, how long it takes to fructify, then it does. So it may be shorter, it may be longer.
Is it possible to have a reaction from this life itself?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, go outside the front gate, take a stick, hit one of the rickshaw wallets. That would get you an instant reaction. That one you don't even have to add water.
The same way, head of Brandon, the poet on that slope, we hear that the quota of a sukha and dukha in your life is fixed. I mean, it's not that you can get more sukha by your endeavor, not just like the quota of dukha comes on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows that what even the hitting of the rikshawala, the reaction that we are getting is. Seems from our previous reaction.
Yeah, means it's your karma that you would be foolish enough to go out there. See, what you have to understand is that means it's like this. You have to make the distinction between the general principle and then application of details. Right? It's just like you take astrology. Okay. Then they will go and say you're under a particular planet. So you can give some generalized principles, but then you want to get into detail, then they will take within that overall ruling of the planet, the nine planets have their ruling. Right? Then within that one, you know, one ninth of that whole thing, that's divided into nine, and they go down to five levels. You know, I think beyond that it gets too small to calculate the time. By the time they tell you what you're going to get, the time's already passed. So they only go down to that. So then everything has that. It means it is your karma that you would do this to get that reaction. But it's still action and result. You know what I'm saying? But the modes are doing it. So you have the mentality that would, you know, get you fired up to go out there and, you know, engage in a tete-a-tete with the rickshawwalas. Right? Does that make sense?
Well, I am not very clear with this. Not very clear with the concept. But I mean,
what's your purpose? What do you want to know? What do you really want to know?
Whatever suffering comes to us in our life, it's surely based on the previous reactions, previous activity that we have done. And as
yes, but I'm just saying that still it has to come through something. Right? You're supposed to be in a riot, so somebody has to be involved in that riot. And something has to be done to cause that riot. Right? So then by the karma, then you're causing the riot. Sometimes you just walk around the corner and there's a riot going on. You know?
Till now, my understanding was that we cannot get any reaction from this life activity. Like, right now, what activity I perform?
Means that is there. The point is but it goes into the future. It can be, you can do something now and it'll get you a result tomorrow. Why is it you go to work and then you get your paycheck next week? But you don't get it today. Or you don't get it before you start. You know what I'm saying? It's you have a big circle and in that smaller circle. If it was so easy to understand, people would have figured it out long ago and they'd be simply bored. You know? That's the thing. But the living entities that are in prison, see, it's like this. You have to understand. Ask any prison warden, what is a peaceful prison? Engaged prisoners or unengaged prisoners? Right? So they keep them busy, regulated, they regulate their lives. They take care of them. They see their health is okay, because if their health goes down, then they also become obnoxious. You know, they don't interact with each other badly because they become more obnoxious. You know, they compartmentalize everybody so that they can't bother other people. You know, there's a limit. You know, their arm can only stick so far out of the bars. That's it, you know. So these kind of things is what you do. So that's what Maya does to living entities. She keeps them busy. So if they're bored, they make too much trouble. So they always get busy. So it's so complex that no one can figure it out. But it's not so complex that it can't be figured out. You know? But figuring out is only for those who want to get out of it. But those who are in it can never figure it out. They think they have it figured out. Right? The guy, when he's 55 years old, thinks he's figured out how to be a smooth talker and move with the women, you know, and then a few years he's dead. You know, so, like that. But they never really figure anything out. Like that. Yes?
You were saying...
No, deny
this. That this term, instant karma, also... It's used and it's like the goal of the Gyanis and things like that. When a person actually attains liberation, then you're actually free. Then you actually see how your activities immediately cause reaction. It comes in all the path is strong. And you start dealing on that platform. The platform they're attaining from. Gyanis often like that.
Instant. Because instant means you're in control. That's the thing. So the Gyanis, their thing is control. Karmis is enjoyment. So they don't talk about instant. They, you know, but others, they want control. So therefore, naturally. Because the point is as soon as you do an activity, then the tree starts to grow. And that tree will then create the situation in which you get the fruit. Right? That tree growing, that's going on. So that as soon as you do the activity, that starts. So there already is a reaction. But this idea of instant means that I'm in control because I can tell you're going to get an instant reaction because I said it, it'll happen like that. And the other is that I did it and I got it. So it's just a form of that I'm the controller, you know. It's a, like that when we're not. And that's another, as Prabhu pointed out. So that'll be impersonalism. So then I've covered.
Still, they're aware of.
Yeah, they're aware.
There's more activity and idea to
listen. Yeah, they can see it happen. Like that, but because their activities that someone who's conscious performs are going to give less big reactions, so then the circle is quicker, you know, and more obvious.
You were really explaining at the beginning that we have a choice to not be affected by the modes or be affected by the modes. Like Prabhu was saying, when someone came in deep ignorance, like attached to vices, that he has a choice at one point to stop. Mm-hmm. Like this heavy, heavy liquor that they take immediately goes down the throat, it's tremendous pain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's instant reaction, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
But he can avoid it, he can decide it. I will stop now.
Mm-hmm.
That now we are talking about Shani, about Satra. He has three weapons. One is the mace, or instant reaction. One is the javelin to catch someone in the long run in the same life. And the other one is the bow to catch someone in the next life. So this is we constantly receiving instant reactions too, especially
mm-hmm.
in ISKCON.
Mm-hmm.
We have to clear up our karma. Still, if we do something immediately, the Lord is rectifying us.
Then you add on to that dollar. You had a point there, Lord.
Yeah, you were saying that when disciple takes initiation to the spiritual master, then the spiritual master takes that disciple's karma.
Mm-hmm.
And any reactions that the disciple does in the future also goes to the spiritual master. But then, if the karma is taken, then we still see that disciples, they get sick, they die from car accidents, whatever. You know, still these things happen to them. Before the effects of the karma go to the...
So what is karma for? Why should there be the law of karma? Just for fun? You know, it's... Durga Devi has a strange sense of humor. You know, what would be the reason for it? It's, you know, or let's go bigger. What's the purpose of the material world? Yeah, to rectify the living entities. So that means karma is for rectification. So now rectification means the result, a particular situation must be created to rectify it. So now, and that's based on consciousness. So in the normal state of affairs, when one's under the modes of nature, he'll perform an activity, his consciousness won't change by the time the result comes. And it may not even change when the rectification takes place. So then, that is, technically, that's karma. For the devotees, what happens, the karma is removed, but the consciousness is still remains. So the method of rectification is the same. Does that make sense? No. Okay, let us say a devotee has a cold, and a karmi has a cold. Right? So it's natural that for the devotee having a cold, there's a completely different system of getting rid of it than the karmi, right? Or is it the same? Right? You go to the doctor. The doctor says, oh, you're a devotee? Oh, okay, then we use, you know, these other medicines here. We have some. Take out some blue Play-Doh, roll that into a ball, you get one of these, and you get an orange one here, and like that, right? It's different. Or you get the same medicine as the non-devotees. The same. So to rectify the consciousness, the situation and the activity that happens in that situation is the same. Because karma is only for rectifying consciousness. The difference is that for the karma, it will happen at a scheduled time in a scheduled way. But for the devotee, if he's corrected that consciousness, there's no need for it to happen. Or to that degree that he's corrected it, then it will happen that much. That's the difference. So even if you see very heavy, you know, very severe karma, then it should have been more. Prabhupada said, you should have had your arm cut off, you got a little nick on your finger. Because that nick then is enough to get the work done. Because the devotee becomes more sensitive, more refined, more conscious.
But why doesn't it change once the devotee takes initiation?
Why doesn't it change?
When he takes initiation.
Why doesn't it change when he takes it? It is changing, but it depends upon his change. As his consciousness changes, the situation changes. That's the thing. It's in Krishna's control. Otherwise, he just leaves it up to the modes of nature to just take care of it. So because the devotee doesn't, it's not a magic. It's a matter of the individual living entity accepting that I am Krishna's servant and acting in that capacity. Right? Because otherwise, what's the meaning? Why do you take initiation? Just to get rid of bad karma? Now that I'm a devotee, nothing bad should happen to me? Right? So that's not, we take initiation to go back to Godhead. The reason that bad reactions come is because those are the nodes where our bad consciousness is. So that's where you have to look. When something bad happens, then you have to analyze, okay, what is this? What's going on? What's its background? What is my consciousness that allows this to happen? So then that's what's going on. So it's still to rectify the living entity. But now it's to rectify them, to take them back to Godhead, rather than to just make them something more pious. That makes any sense? Yes.
Prabhupada explains in maybe, I think it's in the chapter of Priya Ratha, how he chases the sun around. And he mentions that it's a fact that when a person gets initiated by a bona fide Vaishnava under their holy names, all of his karma goes. And Prabhupada said, we may not see how it's happening. He said, but we have to accept them. We think the Shastra and Sanatana Goswami has confirmed this. He said, we may not see there is a gross any change. He said, but what you can see is the mind changes, the subtle body changes. The gross thing you may not notice. Any change, but the actual, he said, you can perceive how the subtle body can affect. Because before you didn't even know what Krishna was, and all of a sudden everything is related to Krishna. You know? And he said, of the two, the subtle body is more important, because by the subtle body you get the gross body. So that's more. So actually, the subtle body does change. And you can perceive it quite easily.
You had something.
When you take initiation, it's a life of contract. A spiritual master takes his side to take it back to Bhagavad, but we promise also to follow certain principles. So to the degree also, we don't break that contract, we get also our karma is shame. If we go on breaking that contract, then we cannot expect that our karma is gone. To the degree of reactions, but now it's more serious.
Yeah.
More severe reaction than karma.
Let's see. Is it adding to that or? Okay. It's like what Janani was saying. It's the thing of the consciousness. So then, the principle of what has to be applied to correct that consciousness there, and so then sometimes it may be that what needs to be applied is very severe to correct it, but still that principle is, as long as there is, you know, some attempt, then that remains. If you break the contract, you know, that means fully, then it's another thing, then you can fall back into the realm of karma again. But the reactions that you'll get, those are then the reactions of the consciousness. I would say, as Jnanivasa's, he was pointing out, is that someone who understands this is aware of, he can connect the activity and the reactions. He can see them. So for them it is, for them, they can see the, you know, the short-term and the long-term reactions. They can see what was the consciousness before, what it is now. So therefore, this gives that reaction, this activity gives. So they can, it becomes dynamic, because everything is then seen in relationship to Krishna.
Then Mrit Pujara Vyadi would not change.
No. First death, old age, well, no need. But that's the point. Prabhupada says most do religion because they expect it to change. But it won't change. You can change the consciousness, and therefore then the result. Because the point is, let's say we decide, I want money, or want a house, or want a family to be happy. But then and so we turn to religion. Because irreligion is not giving us, we turn to religion. Or if religion doesn't give us, we turn to irreligion. But that's our goal. But that's because we've bought into the principle that these things will make me happy. They will make me happy. But the scriptures are pointing out they don't make anyone happy. You know, ultimately there's no satisfaction. You may get something temporary, but actually you won't get really satisfied. So then you can change the consciousness that these make me happy. So whether you have them or not, you're happy. Because satisfaction is the root of happiness. And being unsatisfied is the root of unhappiness. So if we understand that we are happy if we are satisfied, then whatever you have, you're happy. Because you're satisfied. So it's a whole different concept. That's the difference, is that the spiritual life means you change your whole method of values. Because it boils down to becoming happy, right? You have samandavide prayojana, and the whole point is prayojana means your goal. Goal is happiness. So that means how you identify yourself and what methods you use are all for the purpose of becoming happy. I identify like this, I do these activities, therefore I'll be happy. So you change what is your definition of happiness, everything else changes. So that's the difference, is just getting us to agree that happiness is actually means is the Lord's happiness. And material happiness is satisfaction. Right? If you're satisfied, you're always happy in the material world. And the spiritual world, if Krishna is pleased, you're happy. If you accept that, then it works. But otherwise, it's, I will be happy. And I will be happy through what? Some is through sense gratification, some is through this or that, whatever. You know, being, you know, what is it, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, you know, the friend of everybody here, whatever. You choose what it, but it's there. So then you have your activities to go with it. So that's the, one can change that consciousness, then things start to work. The difficulty is changing the consciousness, because it's something that we don't look at. Okay, I'm a devotee. Why am I a devotee? Okay, because I wear these funny bed sheets, you know, I put mud on my forehead, you know, I took out the, the non-vegetarian substance out of my burger, you know, I did all these things. Okay, now, you know, where's the happiness? But actually, it's the whole thing is conscious. You change the gross, and then from the gross, then you start to notice the subtle, and from the subtle, you start to notice the spiritual. That's the progression. So the whole idea is you are changing what you do with your body to actually change your consciousness. But until you do that, at least you're becoming purified, because you have at least the ultimate goal, though you don't know the steps in between, to go back to Godhead. But then, as you progress, then you start to become conscious. You know, Janash was saying, you become conscious of karma. You can see it working. You can see whatever's going on in connection with Krishna. So that means you can see everything. It means you can observe the metaphysical. You can observe the subtle, and you're able to observe it in connection to Krishna. Right? So that's the Madhyama platform.
Sounds very danger is to try to analyze the karma of others or to be ourselves the ones to see if someone is paying karma or not.
Dangerous to see the karma of others means there's principles in which it works. So you can point out, in general, is that whatever you're getting, we can understand as karma. So then you can help them deal with what consciousness they should have in dealing with that karma.
Like Prabhu was asking about devotees also have car accidents, but doesn't mean that because someone dies in a car accident, someone dies peacefully in a bed, the other person was more karmatic.
It's just a matter of what is necessary to correct that particular consciousness. Because they always say, he died peacefully in his sleep, but I don't know how peaceful they'll be when three, extremist, kind of punks show up with their dogs and chains, and say, hey, we're looking for you. So it looks peaceful, but you generally see when someone is shocked, they don't do anything. They're quite peaceful. Like that. The brain stops working, everything stops. And just like that. So then they say, oh, he died and he was peaceful. Had a peaceful death.
Chakras die very roughly when they go up.
Yeah, because for them it's no big deal. You have to open the door, so if that door means removing your head, then it works. Yeah, it's a point. Shut the ears. Thank you. Okay. One announcement.
Now it's in the temple. It's Alayana
Swami. Ranath Maharaj program is going on in the temple. Oh.
Yeah, because the weather is
not working,
but it's
making in the temple. Okay. So the weather's no good, so Radhanath Maharaj's program is in the temple.
He gives class.
He'll give class. So that will answer. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Prabhupada ki, Jai Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai 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 Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki. See, that was an instant karma. I talked a little bit. We got told that it's fine. Let me see. Calms down. Okay? So there.